I am guessing, but when you think of Bible memory tasks of way back when, Hebrews may not be among the top books that comes to mind. Let's even just find out. Anyone have their verse of Hebrews that they can just say, yep, that's always in my head? I didn't think so. Hebrews is a lovely book, but it's also one of these confusing books. It gets back into this, well, Hebrew way of thinking and talking about the life of the church and these big metaphors of the sacrificial life and death of Jesus Christ in light of the Levitical code and yada, yada, yada. All of which is great and wonderful, but not all that easy to really wrap your head around or put to use. So by and large, we have a couple of chapters and a couple of areas that we visit with any frequency at all. Chapter 11, which is by faith, and by faith, and by faith, and by faith. And then this part of chapter 12, which obviously follows by faith, and then begins with therefore. This is Hebrews 12, verses 1 through 6 and 12 through 13. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and the sin that clings so closely. And let us run with perseverance that race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith, who, for the sake of the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, disregarding its shame, and has taken his seat at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such hostility against himself from sinners, so that you may not grow weary or lose heart. In your struggle against sin, you have not resisted the point of shedding your blood. And have you forgotten the exhortation that addresses you as children? My child, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, or lose heart when you are punished by him. For the Lord disciplines those who he loves and chastises every child whom he accepts. Therefore, lift your drooping hands and strengthen your weak knees, and make straight the paths for your feet, so that what is lame may not be put out of joint, but rather healed. By and large, we are people in love with the new, or at least the concept of it. Sure, we pride ourselves on the years that we can get out of a piece of equipment or a car. My personal record is 240,000 miles on a 1981 Honda Civic. But there's always the allure of the new and the better, because we know that there is something else out there, whether we're looking for it or not. The little computers that we carry around with us seem to always be new and be wanting to be new, as they're more or less planned to maybe last you 3 or so years before it just sort of coughs up and dies, or somebody says, well, seriously, you're using that old thing? It actually takes a fair amount of sophistication to keep an older system running for years into its life. And I think culturally we are obsessed with the new, technologically or not, and have been for decades. And in some ways it makes sense, especially for we Europeans. We're the ones who said, huh, there's a new world over there somewhere full of things that we don't know. Sounds like a plan. Let's go. Let's try it. Let's see what happens. And on to the generation, that impulse kind of sits with you. The vision of being modern has been with us from the beginning and driving us to reinvent and rearrange at a far greater pace than those places with deeper historical roots. And of course, we're always sold that the new is always better. Whether or not the truth is actually that, so it is. And becomes part of our way of thinking about the world and how it is. And the church is not immune from these impulses either. Laying aside theological innovations, be whatever they might be, the way that we do church and the reasons why we do church are always being pushed forward. New programs and ideas fill our inbox every day, promising that if we just follow these six easy steps and pay a monthly subscription fee, our pews will be full and our budgets will overflow. You'll forgive my skepticism. Even as we have changed some of what we do and how we do it as needs must, I always find myself wondering, often whether it could be as easy as that, even as I occasionally wish that it were. Change is good, and even the things that we don't expect can work out well. When we started 3 years ago, we didn't really expect to be doing a live stream every Sunday. That wasn't the plan, but here we are. And just out of, for curiosity's sake, our average live stream gets viewed about 40 times, both in the week of and the week past. I think the maximum that I've ever seen is about over 100. So it's a different way of thinking about who's in the pews with you. Change and the expectation of magical results are always going to be with us, whether or not change to be engaged in is a whole other and serious conversation that we also need to hold on to. But if we put this impulse into the light of our text for today, one wonders whether we are being called to change at all. Because we have this cloud of witnesses. And even using that phrase evokes for us the people who populate that cloud so easily. In other churches, you may well have more visible reminders of the people who came before. The large stained glass window endowed by thus and such a family and what have you. And on and on. Maybe even the memorial marker of those who died in wars and other things like that. But we know that the cloud is with us. The cloud is here. Those people who come so easily to mind in this space and in this time, if only just to say, oh, I wonder what they would say about this. Or, oh, that would make them laugh. And sometimes that's a warm feeling to, that encourages us and connects us to the deep history of place and time and worship. But other times, that cloud can elicit in our heads a judgment on what is present and now versus what was back then. And sometimes that voice can be helpful, and sometimes that voice is not helpful. Try though we might to reside in a world of faith that most of the time looks familiar and is familiar. It seems at times one of the places that is least likely to change of anything out there. And to be clear, that's part of what we like about church. Its rootedness, its tradition, its way of being that is solid and stable. It has a way of anchoring us for the work of faith, and that is good. But it also can be something that is challenging to say, well, maybe things are just harder now, or different now, or less faithful now, that they don't work in the way they used to, or things change in the ways that we wish that they would not. And thinking about all this can be a little bit tiring. There's a little denying the fact that there is fatigue involved in living this life of faith. We can tire of looking for the hope of the world change when the world seems so solidly immovable. We may not have the same threats of life and death decisions about our witness in our lives that the original hearers of the book of Hebrews may have been experiencing. But there is a way of feeling that this way of seeking and doing and being can just sort of be tiring. As we wait time again for Jesus come and come soon. To put one foot in front of the next and to try to follow Jesus every day means living as a person who seeks to bear another one's burdens in a culture of narcissism. Being a person who stores up treasures in heaven in a consumeristic climate. And being a person who lives as a peacemaker in a society who is all too ready to resort to warfare, torture, and terrorism to accomplish their aims. And it needs to be said, faith is not what comes naturally for us. Being a Christian is not a matter of getting expression of our true inner self, but rather harnessing our inner selves and the goodness that is there to always discipline that goodness to be our first thought and not our fifth. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, and it can be tiring. And it can leave us gasping from mile to mile on this race that we are running, especially when it seems that the choices that we make may or may not have all that much consequence. But that's where we need our witnesses. Not to root us in the deep history of the past, but simply to inspire us with the long view of our faith. It speaks something beyond the day-to-day reality that is here and connects us to the vision of the kingdom already and the kingdom coming still. I think I've mentioned from time to time that I meet regularly with a spiritual director. I don't think I could do this work without some sort of external support for my internal life. And the work of a spiritual director, if you haven't run into it before, is unique. We can think of a therapist who works with you to, in your way of thinking and your way of experiencing the world, to try to give you a different way of thinking and experiencing those realities for you. But a spiritual director works with where is God? And how is God for you and in you? And where do you see the Spirit? And where is the Spirit leading? Help you to reframe the spiritual questions into application in daily life. My spiritual director is the same one that I've met with since 2006. No, a little bit later than that, but it doesn't matter. A long time. All the way back in Arizona. And over the years and all the moves and everything else, I've always kept going back to her for nearly 15 years now. Even though it's now on Zoom, which isn't all that great. Simply because she can be part of my cloud of witnesses. She's walked with me for a long time now, through all sorts of decisions and all sorts of discernments, and she kind of knows how my brain works, and she can say, Bryce, really? And she has, from time to time, said, do you remember when we first started talking? And one of the deepest desires of your heart was accompaniment and future and presence. Look at your life now. See what God has done. Thanks be to God. And that's enormously valuable for me. Because with this experience, she can help me recall the way that God's Spirit has moved with me in the past and remind me that that movement continues today. Because I must confess that in the near-term exhaustions and demands of whatever the moment happens to be, it can be easy to say, well, maybe the Spirit is off for a coffee. Or not here at all. Even though all the theological imperatives tell me that that's not true, it can sometimes feel that way. We all know that what we know to be true and what we feel to be true are two different things. As much as we want the big, readily defined, and easily perceived movements of God's Spirit to come and wipe away all that ails us here and now, what often comes is the movement of God giving us what we need, and only in the small and subtle ways that change us over time. And it can be hard to understand that this too is the Spirit. And this too is there. And we can miss the comings of the kingdom that happen around us each and every day. Having someone to help me think about this helps me clear my eyes and remind me of God's grace and the inestimable encouragement that allows me to know that that grace still is here. And that's what the cloud of witnesses does for us as well. It gives us the testimony of the way that God has been and speaks to the way that God will be now and always. The cloud exists not to root us to our traditions, lest we lose something that we ought not, but nor are they there to be held up as, well, this is how it used to be in comparison with how it is, but rather to simply say that God is at work here and now. We use our pantheon of heroes and heroines of faith, the saints on the wall, as being too holy and too blessed and too good at what they were doing and being patient in all the ways that we want to remember them as. And it's easy for us to forget that they too waited on the Lord. They too sought wisdom, and they too got things right and struggled each and every day. In short, they ran the race that we are now running, before us and with us. And they are witnesses to the way that God works with us and through us, in spite of all that we're feeling now, reminding us that God's kingdom and God's work is far beyond us. Hebrews, like I said, is one of these books where we just have our couple of chapters. And it's full of references and theological notions that are there. And if we go mining for theological notions, there's plenty to mine there, but it's one of these things where not all of it really made sense, like I said in the beginning. But it's important to know that the book wasn't particularly written to be mined in that way. Instead, this book was penned as a sermon of encouragement, a word of exhortation, according to chapter 13, to be spoken to a congregation at worship. What is now philosophical prose that requires a trip to Wikipedia to wrap your head around it, in its day and time, it was a relevant and approachable way of simply saying, you are not alone. Keep on going. Keep on walking. We are in the position of reading this letter well after it was preached and not reading it as what it is, as a sermon. At the end of the day, that's what Hebrews is. It's a Sunday sermon meant to encourage the weary along the way, just like it might encourage us today, cheering us on to something new. People of faith have walked time and again with God in the midst of heartbreak and rejoicing, and have been given the grace that they need by God in the spirit of faith. People have gone before, and people will come after us. God has seen them through, and they remain to bless and encourage us that God is indeed faithful. We don't need a roster of those who are far better than we, but we do need those who have been where we are, who've seen the race, and who cheer us on. And there they stand, our cloud of witnesses, cheering us on and reminding us that the race is not won by our strength alone, but rather is imbued with the strength of God, even when we don't know where our path might lead. They help us break our nearsighted yearning for the novelty and the power of that novelty, even at the same time where they can perhaps remind us that faith can look different than what we expected to. And that when our traditions change, or the hundreds of elements that make us who we are might scare us, or the reality is the world might be with us and intimidate us and scare us, there too God is, and God resides within it, works through it, running with us, calling us forward in faith, and reminding that the work is all is and always has been the work of Christ, and not ours. We hold on to the past to remind us that God awaits for us in the future, no matter what that future holds. May we be given the vision to see all that God is doing here around us, be it old and familiar or frighteningly new and strange. And may we be given the courage to trust the guiding Spirit as building the kingdom then, now, and forevermore. Amen.